Welcome to Chapter 4 on the Nouns of the Second Declension. In this chapter, we're largely going to work with learning four basic things. We're going to talk about gender, we're going to talk about number. Those will both be easy because they're very similar to what we have in English. And then the most difficult concept that you'll be wrestling with for a while here is called case. And we're going to go through the basically five different cases that are found in the Greek language. And then finally, there'll be a set of forms to learn for both the masculine and for the neuter, and we'll learn to chant those. First of all, let's do a little introduction to nouns in general. The Greek language is called a fusional language, largely because it fuses endings on the end of verbs and nouns, and especially with the nouns that we're focusing on now. The endings will tell you what options are available to the noun as far as how it works in the sentence. One of the nice things about a fusional language and having these endings is that the word order can be jacked all around and you still know where the subject is, where the object is, even though the word order is very chaotic. So let's first of all look at the things that are very similar to English in terms of the gender. In Greek, as in English, we'll have a masculine. In English, for example, he. The prince is a he. The feminine is she. So a ship is feminine in English. The princess is feminine. The queen is feminine. And then we have the neuter. The neuter refers to things like rocks and computers and in Greek, we have the word hamartia, and it has a he that indicates the feminine, and it's translated sin. Harmatolos has a ho after it, which is the masculine form for sinner. Many abstract words will be feminine. Hieron has a ta after it, which indicates that it is neuter, referring to the temple. So Greek can mark their nouns as either masculine, feminine, or neuter. But that marking is only a grammatical marking and many times does not match an actual gender of the object it's referring to. So gender is pretty straightforward, very similar to what we have in English. You have a masculine, a feminine, and a neuter. In both Greek and English, we have a singular and a plural. Apparently, Greek originally had a dual also. In English, we have singular words like skate, child, woman, and deer. And we form the plural in various means. Normally, we form the plural by adding an S to the word, like skate becoming skates. But then notice child becomes children, totally different ending, and then woman becomes women, with an infixed E, changing it to a plural. And then some words like deer and the plural being deer, there's no change at all. So English is actually fairly confusing. Greek, on the other hand, will be fairly clear with the endings of the plural. In English also, we note that the singular or plurality of the subject impacts how the verb is taken, as it will in Greek. So she takes, but they take. He goes, but they go. And similarly in Greek, the subject, whether it's singular or plural, will impact how the verb is constructed. In Greek, we have the word ouranos, means heaven. Ouranoi means heavens, plural. And so the difference between the os and the oi ending indicates whether it's singular or plural. Well, that's pretty straightforward. Actually easier than English. The cases in Greek provide the beginning student with one of the most difficult hurdles early in first year Greek. The cases describe how nouns function in the syntax of the sentence. There are five of these case endings. So let's jump in and look at the most prevalent one, the nominative. It's called the naming or designating or nominalizing case. Usually it functions as an indicator of the subject of the sentence. So the boy ran across the road. The boy would be in the nominative in Greek. Now, the subject of the sentence is its normal usage, but there is also a predicate nominative, when the nominative is used in the predicate, especially with verbs of like is. In English, we have something similar to this. It is proper to say it is I in English, using the nominative, and it is incorrect to say it is me, using the accusative. Same thing as it is she is proper. It is her is improper because it uses the accusative rather than the nominative. So the predicate nominative with is-type verbs functions where the nominative functions on both sides of the verb. The nominative also has an appositional function. And what apposition means that it specifies or restates another nominative. So, for example, Paul, a servant, an apostle, called to be whatever, Paul, a servant, an apostle, are all appositional. The servant and the apostle are appositional to Paul, and restate and specify more exactly the aspect of Paul that's being developed. So to simplify this, the nominative at this point in the course will simply be the subject of the sentence. But be aware that there are sometimes appositional usages, and also the predicate nominative, which we'll see quite frequently. While the nominative is the most frequently used case as a subject of the sentence and other usages, the accusative is the second most frequently used case. Generally, it occurs as the object of the sentence. Its root idea seems to limit the preposition or verb that it's attached to in terms of content, direction, extent, goal, and especially quantity. Generally, the accusative is used for the object of the sentence. So, for example, in English, you have the car hit him. Him is the object of the verb, limiting what was hit. So it would be in the accusative in Greek. The car hit the pole. The pole would be in the accusative in Greek. Now there is also a double accusative with some verbs which take two objects. So for example, in a sentence like this, he will teach you, accusative, all things, accusative. So both you and all things are accusative. And then another usage which is found in the New Testament is that sometimes the accusative will be used as the subject of the infinitive. So, for example, Jane took him to learn. It's the actual subject of the infinitive to learn, him to learn. So for us right now, we're just simply going to learn that the accusative is the object of the sentence, as well as the object of the verb took. The genitive is the most flexible of the cases. It can be used in terms of description, possessiveness, origin, relationship. It's the most flexible and can be used in many contexts with the prepositions or even the other nouns that it's attached to. We will generally use the word of to translate the genitive. For example, what are the different ways that of is used in the following sentences? The writing of the prophet sat there. Of the prophet, in this case, would be descriptive of the origin of the writing. The boy of Nazareth went to. Of Nazareth would tell the origin or source of the boy. The son of Mary spoke to him. Of Mary would describe a relationship, mother to son. And the book of the chief was worn would be the chief's book, that is, possessiveness. It's the chief's book. And generally, we're going to use the word of to translate the genitive, but you can see that the English word of as the genitive can be used in all sorts of different ways. The dative case is used to reference the indirect object, location, or agency, and some other things. The dative case is not present in modern Greek today. It's died out. But what are the different translational options for this dative case? This one has quite a few options for us when we go to translate it. Words like to, by, for, at, and with all can be used to translate the dative. I always kind of remember it, the 2x4 and then ate with. So I ate with a 2x4 or at with 2x4. And all those words then can be used to translate the dative. Now, look at the different ways that it can be understood. For example, she spoke to him. To him here is the indirect object. She spoke to him. He went to school. To school specifies the location. He hit the nail with the hammer. With the hammer tells the agent or instrument that was used. He lives in Nazareth. In Nazareth tells location. So the dative case can be used in quite a few different and varied contexts. And we'll have to roll with it with these options. Generally, 2x4 is a good place to start. At, with, and sometimes in can also be used to translate the dative case. Often, we're going to see the dative case used to express the indirect object, as in the case of, she spoke the law to him. The law would be the direct object as the accusative. To him would be the indirect object in the dative. And that's how it will be used quite frequently. The final case that often has the exact same morphology as the nominative is the vocative. And this is the case of direct address. So, for example, you'd say, O Lord, save me. The O Lord is direct address, and so would be put in a vocative. But the vocative form will often be the same as the nominative, and only the context will indicate a vocative is being used. Vocatives are fairly infrequent, so don't really worry about them very much at this point. All right, that was quite a bit with the various cases in terms of the complexity of the cases. Let's try to simplify it now and just go with a simplified form at this point in the course. The nominative is generally taken as the subject of the sentence. The genitive, usually translated by the keyword of, refers to possession or description. The dative is translated 2x4 at with, and is generally taken as the indirect object. The accusative is the object of the verb. And the vocative is the case of direct address, O Lord. But it's very infrequent, so we're not going to do too much with the vocative at this point. Those are the five cases. We'll have to understand how they work then in the sentences, and then we'll be learning next their morphological forms, the forms that are added to make the various nominative, genitive, dative, accusative forms. Before we jump into the morphology or the forms of the various cases, we need first to look at the article. There's an indefinite article in English, so we say a boat. This a boat, the indefinite article, is not marked in Greek. Greek doesn't have an a or an indefinite article that goes on nouns. It does, however, have an article, so the boat is identified as the article, which identifies a word, but this article, the, can also be used as a pronoun sometimes for he, she, it substitutes, and at other times it has various nominalizing usages as well. Sometimes the article isn't even translated when it comes with certain proper nouns. For example, you don't say the Jesus, which is what the Greek actually says, but you say simply Jesus. other abstract nouns as well. You don't say the grace, you just say grace, even though it has the article in Greek. The article will be very helpful at points, giving us a hint at the case of the noun that it modifies. Here's what the forms of the article actually look like. Ho is the nominative form of the article, the, which is masculine. So we've seen on some of the nouns already that it has ho after it indicates that this noun is masculine. Hey is the for the feminine forms. We'll learn those in the next chapter. To is the article for the neuter gender. When you learn the noun, it's wise to learn the article that goes with it so you can remember what gender it is, whether it's masculine, feminine, or neuter. That will be indicated by the article that's placed with the noun in the vocabulary lists. So, ho, masculine, hey, feminine, to, neuter, the article that goes with the various nouns. There are three declensions for the nouns. What is a declension? A declension is a shared set of endings that are tagged on or fused on to the end of nouns. And so you have the first declension, which is an a, alpha, or eta ending nouns. Usually these nouns are feminine, not always. So words like graphe, see how the eta ends the noun, or hora, with the alpha on the end, those are first declension nouns. We'll study those in the next chapter. The second declension nouns end in omicron. You just slide the sigma off and discover that the omicron is in the root of the noun. And these are usually masculine or neuter. So, for example, we've already had the word logos, which is a second declension noun. Third declension nouns we'll study a little bit later, and these are consonant-ending nouns. They're nouns that end in a consonant, and their morphology or forms are a little more complicated. Charis is an example of this. The stem ends in a row, and so the stem ends in a consonant. It's a third declension noun. So we have first declension nouns, eta alpha, which are usually feminine, second declension nouns, which end in an omicron, masculine or neuter usually, and third declension nouns, which end in a consonant, and those will be masculine, feminine, or neuter. And these three sets of endings will be found at the end of Greek nouns. All right, now we're ready for the forms of the second declension nouns. These nouns end in an omicron. Examples are apostolos, or apostle, angelos, or angel, logos, word. To get the root, you just slide off the sigma, and then the omicron is exposed, indicating that it's a second declension noun. All right, now we're ready for the second declension noun forms, the masculine. From the singular column, first, our nominative, or the subject of the sentence, is logos. It's our root form, means word. The genitive form is logu, and it means of a word. The dative form is logo, and it means 2x4 at a word. The accusative form is logon, means a word, and it'll be the direct object of the verb. The vocative form is loge, and it means o word. For the plural nominative is logoi, means words as the subject of the sentence. The genitive plural is logon, means of words. The dative plural is logois, and it means two or four words. Logus is the accusative plural, means words, and it's found as the direct object of the verb. The vocative is Logoi means, O words. You'll notice that the vocative and the nominative are the same in the plural, so the context will have to distinguish which one it is. The vocative is really rather rare. Now we're ready for our second declension chant form with the logos. Again, as in all the chants, you should get these down so that you can say them in your sleep. Here's the second declension. You'll notice that we dropped off the vocative because it's insignificant and oftentimes just matches the nominative. Here's the second declension chant for the masculine form. Logos, logu, logo, logon. Logoi, logon, logois, logus. And once again, logos, logu, logo, logon. Logoi, logon, logois, logus. And say it with me this third time. Logos, logu, logo, logon. Logoi, logon, logois, logus. Now we'll look at the second declension paradigm for the neuter nouns. We're going to use hieron as an example, which means temple. So this is also a chant that will parallel with the chant for logos. Second declension, neuter, hieron. Hieron, hieru, hieró, hieron. Hiera, hieron, hierois, hiera. You'll notice that the nominative and the accusative on the neuter are exactly the same, and the context will have to distinguish these forms. So the nominative and the accusative in the neuter for both the singular and the plural are exactly the same forms. Notice also that the genitive and dative endings are exactly the same for the neuter as they are for logos, the masculine. So the chant is hieron, hieru, hieró, hieron. Hi-era, hi-eron, hi-erois, hi-era. Say it with me this third time. Hi-eron, hi-eru, hi-ero, hi-eron. Hi-era, hi-eron, hi-erois, hi-era. That's it for the second declension chant of both the masculine logos and the neuter hi-eron. As we learn to parse verbs, for the nouns, we'll learn how to decline the nouns. The form that we'll use is the case, followed by the number, the gender, then we'll give the root of the word, and then the meaning. So, for example, in logo, it would be declined as a dative, singular, masculine, from logos, meaning 2x4 at with a word. We may just say to a word. Logon would be declined as a genitive plural masculine from logos, meaning of words. And finally, hieron would be nominative, accusative, or vocative, singular neuter, from hieron, meaning temple. These declensional forms will be worked over thoroughly in the workbook. Here's another way just to go back and look at the case from a different perspective. The accusative kind of approaches the object. The dative is kind of in, and the genitive moves away. And so when we connect these various cases with prepositions, you'll notice the motion toward an object, in an object, and separation from an object a lot of times are associated with these cases. Just to review a little bit, the genitive limits kind or quality, and the accusative limits extent or quantity. As Dan Wallace, the author of A Major Modern Advanced Grammar, suggests. In order to build our familiarity with the language, we want to start working on a memory verse in Greek. So here's our first memory verse from John 1:1. En arche ein ho logos means in the beginning was the word. Say it with me in Greek. En arche ein ho logos. And once again, en arche ein ho logos. The second line is kai ho logos ein pros ton theon. And the word was with God. The word ein, by the way, is used twice here, means was. Once again, the second line, kai ho logos ein pros ton theon. And finally, the third line, kai theos ein ho logos. And the word was God. The final line, once again, say it with me. Kai theos ein ho logos. So repeat with me all three lines now. En arche ein ho logos. Kai ho logos ein pros ton theon. Kai theos ein ho logos. Learning these memory verses will help to embed Greek deeply into your mind. Now for the vocabulary of chapter 4. The first word is agapao, and it means I love. The second word is grapho, and it means I write. The third word is de, and it's the conjunction meaning but or and. The fourth word is doulos, and it means servant or slave. The fifth word is heurisko, and it means I find. The sixth word is hieron, and it means temple. The seventh word is laos, and it means people. The eighth word is nomos, and it means law. The ninth word is oikos, and it means house. And the tenth word is hos, and it's translated as, about, or how.